Welcome to a Radio 191 FM podcast.
Today we've got Mads Kelly. Hell yeah. How you doing?
Actually, it's morning, isn't it? It feels like it's the end of the day.
Yeah,
it does. I'm good, but you can probably tell I'm tired.
Yeah, me too. I feel you.
We're in this walker together.
We are indeed. Last time I chatted to you on Radio 1, it was for the Toko By and By exhibit. And I remember because you were doing a lot of oceanography. You were doing a lot of ocean experimentation and research and stuff.
Yeah.
And you said that changed you from being, you were sort of yourself as a forest person.
Yes.
And this was like you reconnecting with the ocean.
Yeah.
Where are you now between those two
things? Oh my gosh, wow. What an incredible opening part. I would say at the moment I'm slightly on the forest end of the spectrum, mm-hmm. only because I've been, as we were just discussing, pulling many hours up at Te Korowai Mahiwaka, Orokonui, mm-hmm. Eco Sanctuary. But the good thing is, this play, Wahine Matatoa, has brought me back into the intertidal zone, I feel. Yeah. And I've had some good times practicing with my feet in the water for this kaupapa. So, yeah, I'm slowly shifting back to the middle, and I suspect by the end of the play's run, I'll be back into being a pro-ocean, you know.
Pro-ocean.
Yeah, pro-ocean. Yeah. I'll be pro-ocean once more. Yeah.
Were you playing Puoro in the water?
Yes.
Yeah.
Part of my learning was to... I didn't bring it with me today. There are some puoro, which we can discuss later, that are much better practiced in a very big open environment because they are incredibly loud.
Mm.
Yeah.
True. And you've always been a fan of noise as well.
I've always been a bit of a noise guy. Puoro definitely less abrasive, you know, within reason. There's some certainly pretty cool experimental pauka puoro. And of course, these are like what people would call traditional Māori instruments
yes.
from Te Ao Māori.
Uh-huh.
There's cool applications that are experimental and noisy, but in this context, they are being used mostly to evoke voices from Te Taia or kind of ancestral voices. So there's a lot of,
mm-hmm.
Pretty soft kind of emotional sounds.
Totally.
Yeah.
And this this play, mm-hmm. Wahine Matatoa, mm-hmm. is very ancestral because
yes.
it's kind of a biopic, if you will, of your ancestor, Ire Hapiti Patahi. Did they play Tauka Puoro?
So the Tauka Puoro in this play are kind of like a live accompaniment. Mm. So in some ways they are sound effects, they are like supporting environmental sounds to set scenes. And in other contexts, they are an ancestral voice that goes even further back than Pātahi.
Wow.
So one of the core elements or whakaaro of the play itself is this kind of movement of whakapapa back and forth. The two main figures are, you know, centuries apart. There's Elizabeth, who's a teenager in the present day, and then Ere Hapiti Pātahi, who's living throughout the 1800s. And in that way, the puoro, this other voice that kind of emit, you know, new conversations and kind of little prompts for the actors into the space, are sitting even further back from Pātahi. So it's something that she's also listening for in the play. But yeah, it's kind of every direction. Could be a voice from the future, could be a voice from the past.
But she herself didn't play Tauka Puoro.
I mean, who's to say? There's an interesting, a lot of the kōrero around Tauka Puoro these days does sit at very musically, but they actually are very functional instruments, and they have a lot of place in hauora as well.
Right.
So like well-being. So I can't say for sure. I haven't seen any records of Pātahi explicitly using puoro, but they were a very normalised and incorporated part of society, of kind of day-to-day life, of things like being hapu, of well-being. So I like to think that Pātahi probably did at least engage with some casual puoro, if not was really good at it, who knows.
They're the iPhone of the
look, they're like the little, I can't think of a modern day equivalent of something that everybody has, you know, like a they're just
very singular because they are really
specific in the way that they intersect lots of different meanings.
Yeah,
but I think it's important to think that, like, as serious as puoro can be, it can also be really fun. Like, there's puoro like porotiti, which are like toys, you know, but they also help with wrist mobility or with breath work and like controlling anxiety. But they're also just super fun. So like kids like Tamariki can play with Porotiti all the time.
That's awesome.
Would have been great to just be hanging out with your buddies, like showing off all your cool Porotiti tricks, the same way you would play with like a yo-yo or something.
Yeah. Or like vape tricks, but
oh, sick.
Now you're a descendant of Pātahi. Are there any other descendants that you know of who are working on the program?
The playwright, so Cindy Diver, who wrote the play, is a descendant, an uri of Pātahi. One of the actors in the play who plays Pātahi is in fact a descendant of Pātahi, Grace Tūripa, and me and Grace are actually from a similar line that runs through down into Murihiku, like into Southland, from Pātahi's whānau. So yeah, there's three of us at the moment kind of holding that kaupapa.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Must be quite I guess that just feeds back into the notions of te taiao and you know, whakapapa and whatnot.
Yeah, it is very cool. It is very tidal. It is very kamua, kamuri, like things coming back and forth, back and forth. And it adds an extra dimension, I think, to playing in that context. It's a very different kind of performance compared to what I'm used to, because you are kind of tapping into or representing sort of the voices and the thoughts of people that you're literally descended from, who walked these same spaces, like, you know, we're out in the harbour, in those same spaces that we were talking about ages ago, about that other work. Yeah.
If you think about it, I mean, those three roles of Pātahi's descendants in this play are like, you know, kind of voice, you've kind of got like a more spiritual vibe, and then you've got the body of the actor. So there's got like the whole like holistic thing.
Yeah, it's a really exciting play to watch. Like get to sit on the side of the stage the whole time and watch the whole play carry out. And the core actors are just incredible. They're swapping between so many different roles and so many different timings and settings and contexts, and kind of weaving it all together into quite a good, you know, like a really strong representation of how I feel we're sitting now, with sort of marrying these pre and post colonial histories. It's really fascinating.
I want to get into some of those histories in a second, but you are indeed playing Tauka Poro for this show. What kind is it? Is it a shell or putatara, or is it something else?
Ooh, it's very exciting. So there's actually, I should have done a count before I got here, there's at least 15 different poro
quite a variety.
So I have a whole table with a big spread of different oro, different voices, and some of them are tumutumu, like found percussion, so I did bring a couple of those today that I can show you, but includes shells, sticks, things that you can forage that bring out a voice directly from taiao. Some of them like putatara, there's definitely one of those, that's the large conch shell that we were talking about. That is one of the ones that would need a lot of space to practice, because it's incredibly loud and projecting. There's, you know, things like kowowo, which I've also brought one of today, so types of flutes. There's instruments like pumutumutu, which is like a notched flute. It's pretty exciting. I won't spoil all of them, but there's basically a giant table full of treats and beautiful tauka. Nice. And they all have their own role, kind of to support different motifs or whakaaro or types of events within the play. So you'll hear the same puoro emerging throughout the play in the context of certain conversations or, you know, certain themes arising.
How long have you been playing these different puoro for?
Well,
do you have to do, like, was some of these the first time you've ever touched them?
Yeah, absolutely. This kaupapa is a really interesting one for me. I've not really performed for a play since I was in high school, when I was in the band for Footloose, Tiger Boys.
Nice.
This is different for lots of reasons, because it's with Tauka Puro, which I only just started learning basically because of this play. So Ruby Solly, incredible puro artist, musician, composer, doctor, did the original. She originated the score, or the live score, for this play when it was first in its development run last year. When the time came that we got the opportunity to perform the play this year, Ruby couldn't take on that wero to do it this time around, so she basically asked me and said, if you are game, I will teach you everything.
Oh, wow.
So that you can participate in this play as a musician, but also as an uri of Pātahi, and kind of, get really as much into that world of puoro as possible through, like, a really beautiful kaupapa. So, I've basically been learning for the last two or three months non-stop
nice.
With Ruby's guidance and mentorship. We've just been rehearsing non-stop for the last 2 weeks, so mm-hmm. it's all starting to come together. But yeah, up until that, I'd really had like very minor exposure to just some of the most basic pūro, like a little ukutangi, a little clay kind of instrument that I'd mm-hmm. made, mm-hmm. and yeah, little things like the porotiti. So I'd kind of been using them more in that playful kind of noise exploration.
Playful
yeah. function. And now it's like, right, how do we actually use yeah. them to evoke things and like tell stories? And yeah, it's been mm-hmm. a really exciting challenge.
Was that?
And yeah, very different from the normal gigs that I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, like, yeah. Was that hard to get your head around? I'm trying to use it to evoke things rather than just, I guess, just, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because you'll have, like I said, there's kind of a structure for where the different oro, the different rio of those pūro come up, but you are essentially improvising every time. So you're kind of building the score as you go. And you're also responding to the actors as well. So in some ways it's kind of like scoring a silent movie. Even though there's kōrero there, you're sort of responding to little intangible things like, yeah, what might be happening in the scene environmentally or emotionally, and yeah, thinking about putting yourself in that space. The interesting thing about pūro is they're really connected to like quite small and controlled parts of your body, like different parts of your breath or different little tensions in your hands and things like that. So even just cluing in and kind of locking into what the actors are doing will change how the pūro are played. Yeah, they're really sensitive instruments.
Mm.
Yeah.
Really, really fascinating, eh? In February 2023, we chatted about your research around Pātahi, which consisted of a few books, and a few of them were recorded conversations. Mm. And in these conversations and these books, you learned about the role of Kaitahi women in intermarriage with Pākehā when they were settling in the south. Mm. This is due to how their social structure gave them more agency in choosing partners. How does this aspect manifest in the play?
Yeah, this is basically the driving force of the play is kind of the agency of wahine, mana wahine, and the endurance of those wahine through time and mm-hmm. the way that our ancestors can inform, you know, us in our present day challenges. So yeah, there's kind of this ongoing tension or process happening between Elizabeth and Pātahi, and their lives are kind of chasing each other mm-hmm. across time. Mm-hmm. Pātahi obviously moving through from being based here in Otago out at Otako, and then travelling all the way through Rāpaki up to Canterbury, over to the west coast, going on these massive adventures as a result of these different relationships she's had through this early stage of settlement in the South Island. So yeah, this really rapid period of change, and Elizabeth is kind of going through similar challenges, kind of adjusting to these different modes of change, and also thinking about motherhood as well. Pātahi had two girls with Edwin Palmer, that was the settler that she partnered with in the early 1800s, and those girls were taken from her. So there's some interesting threads there about what it means to be a children, what it means to be a mother, what it means to have descendants, you know, stretching way beyond you could ever imagine, and kind of how we can connect back into that. So yeah, that's kind of the whole crux of the play is how those two women, those two wahine mātātoa, mm-hmm. Are moving in synchronicity and also in opposing ways as well.
True.
Yeah.
True, true, true. They're very, 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 I like that theme a lot.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
Theme. Yeah.
Yeah, there's lots of time jumps. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. What have you learned about Pātahi since 2023?
I mean, yeah, it's interesting. A lot of the descendants of Pātahi will have access to pretty similar resources and mm-hmm. research. Mm-hmm. What's been really cool about doing this play is a lot of that research that we can all access, we now get to think about it as actual conversations, which
yes.
is, I find, really rewarding and really emotional. You know, there's things like the diaries of William Martin, who was a gold miner on Te Taipotini, who recorded a lot of Pātahi's story, but it was all done in transcript, so he transcribed what she was saying. But it's, you know, it's sort of this distant thing of reading a transcription from someone. You're not actually sure if he was really recording her words properly, or he's got this kind of lens where he's like, oh, this poor woman, and you know, it's quite sad and melancholy. But we know from her actions and from her agency that she was a really strong person, so it's what I've kind of learnt the most is sort of just actually trying to imagine her tenacity and her cleverness and how she was actually living day to day, rather than these kind of like very, you know, dramatised colonial narratives.
Like take away from her being a badass.
And, you know, and struggling as well. Like the struggle is part of it, but just getting to actually think about, here's how people would have actually, you know, have been negotiating all these different things. Like that sense of change from the early 1800s into 1850 or so, you know, there was so much happening in Te Waipounamu. Like, it's almost hard for us to even imagine how different, you know, the pace of change would have been in those settlement periods. So, that's the thing that I've really enjoyed the most, like trying to really think through what that experience would have been like for her.
There's that Lenin quote, which I quite like, which is like, there are decades where nothing happens, and then there are years where decades happen.
That's pretty much, I mean, this play is, you know, just over about an hour and a half long, and I would say that's covering many, many decades worth of action.
I think that's all the time we have for today. I want to thank you very much for coming
on
the program.
Thank you so much.
Where can people go to watch this?
Amazing. The play is opening on Thursday night. At first, it's all happening at Allen Hall Theatre, so that's with the Dunedin Arts Festival. There'll be shows all the way through till Sunday, so you can still get tickets for those. And then we're playing over on Wanaka, and then if you're a registered member at any of the Rūnaka around Ōtipoti, so Moeraki or Otako or Puketeraki. If you're a registered member, you can actually book in and come and see it played at one of your marae.
Oh, wow.
And we will perform it at your marae.
That's awesome.
Next week. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's really exciting.
I assume online tickets for the Dunedin showing, so at the festival, Arts Festival
you
website.
Yeah, go to the Arts Festival website. Yep, that's right.
Cool. Awesome. Excellent. Well, thank you for coming on. You've requested a brilliant new Marlon Williams track, Ka Hore He Manu E, which we're going to play very shortly. And then up after that track, maybe a couple other tracks, we have Daniel Cromer coming on to talk about their book, Starlight Symphony, and the fundraiser they're doing for that. So very exciting stuff. Again, thank you for coming on. Any final words, Mads?
Come and support the arts and hear me do birdsong with a tiny flute.
Birdsong with a tiny flute. All right. Yeah. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. There are heaps more at r1.co.nz.